Well, good morning again. We have some wiggle room of about 4 to 6 years, but about 168 years before Jesus was born, the Greek king of that region at the time, the region of Judea, decided that he was going to flex and force the Jewish people to offer sacrifices to the god Zeus in the temple complex. As you might imagine, it did not go well. Just like if somebody were to come in today and say, "All right, you are going to pray to Zeus." No. And in that process, he had built the statue of Zeus, and he'd sent a bunch of armed soldiers to make it happen, and a man named Judas Maccabeus kind of had enough and started attacking some of the guards, killed some of them, and then what started as a riot grew into just really guerrilla-style warfare and a full-on revolt and a full-on war. This is what's known as the Maccabean Revolt, or the Hasmonean Revolt, Hasmoneans being their name. Maccabees seemed to be like a nickname. It kind of means the hammer. And what they ended up doing, my guess is kind of to their surprise, but it's hard to say, is that they established what's called the Hasmonean dynasty. In other words, they succeeded for a time. I mean, it's very hard for a large army to fight against kind of guerrilla-style fighters who know the terrain far better than they do. Now, what this established in the short term was a bit of freedom from the Greeks for the Jewish people. And you can bet, and it's a very safe bet to take, that in this process, people would have thought, Judas Maccabeus might be the Holy One, the one we've been waiting for. In other words, the Messiah, who comes and redeems Israel and reforms the temple. Because the temple, having had a whole bunch of filthy Gentiles in its presence, as well as a statue of Zeus, was now desecrated. It was unclean, so they could not offer sacrifices. They could not initiate interaction with the presence of God. It had been made unclean. And in that process, or to address that, they have a process by which they would make the temple clean. And part of that process means that the big old lampstand has to burn for 8 days. They only had enough oil for one, but in some kind of smallish, maybe, but it was big to them in the moment, miracle, the oil lasted as long as they needed. And this is where we get Hanukkah. It became kind of an iconic moment for the people, even at the time of Jesus. Kind of like how growing up my dad would tell me the story of the Alamo or something like that. And for them, it was more than just campfire stories. It was a time when their people were free from Gentile oppression. Now, as the rest of history plays out, the Hasmonean dynasty, it was occupied by mainly a bunch of brothers. They once they took power, they established peace and justice, and everyone lived happily ever after forever. That's a joke. That's a poor, huge joke, because it was not very long after that infighting started to take place. Because as it turns out, if people who like power see people in power, they tend to get jealous. And this included some of their own brothers killing thousands of their fellow Jewish people, men mainly, because they were political rivals. Others sought out and were able to strike deals with the Roman Empire, which by this point was just starting to grow and make its way across the Mediterranean, which that's almost exactly the saying, making a deal with the devil. Not quite, but it's like right there. And so In other words, what started as a moment of courage ended up in just infighting, and there's kind of a direct line between this revolt and the presence of the Romans in Jerusalem at the time of Jesus. Now, I say all of this because everything that Jesus says about being a good shepherd is it should be heard in light of this story, because it happens while they are celebrating Hanukkah. If you noticed in the reading, it says that this took place during the Feast of Dedication. It's the dedication of the temple. And wildly enough, this is the first reference in all of the historical documents that identify Hanukkah as a feast day. And it's in the New Testament. It's not, of course, the first reference to the revolt in that period of time, of course. But as an actual official feast, it is. And that's fascinating to me. The reason why, though, we should kind of have that, I don't know, just lingering in the backs of our minds is that it was kind of a common, there was a common way of talking about leaders of Israel as shepherds. You see this in the prophet Ezekiel, especially. I think it's chapter 34 if you're really bored. And that makes a lot of sense, because Israel, over its long history, were primarily shepherds. I mean, their land was not particularly great for growing crops. I mean, it did okay, mainly barley, grapes, and olives. It does fine for that, but not a whole lot else. It's not like northern Egypt with the Nile Delta and that wonderfully fertile land. So they were shepherds. And that shouldn't surprise us, because it's such a common theme throughout Israelite history, this idea of shepherding. David, the great King David, the man after God's own heart, was a shepherd. And in fact, when the great giant of the Philistines, Goliath, or Goliath as we say in English, was challenging the Israelites and everyone was afraid, David, being this, I say young, he's probably 16 to 18, give or take, he says, I can take him. And King Saul and his cohorts are going, dude, you're a kid. He's been a warrior since he was young. And David does not say, God will be my strength, or some pious thing like that. He says, no, I'm a shepherd watching my flock. I've killed bears and lions. You think I'm afraid of this guy? And it came to pass. So when Jesus says that he's the good shepherd, we have to think about where the emphasis is in that sentence. And in Greek, it's kind of unclear. But think about how this might change if I say it in English. And I say unclear in Greek, like word order. Greek does funny things with word order. But the sentence emphasis, or the sentence ends squarely on the word good. So think about the difference between saying, I am the good shepherd, which would emphasize the speaker of that sentence, versus, I am the good shepherd, which emphasizes the quality. And if Jesus is saying he is the good shepherd, that leads us to ask, who are the bad ones? And it turns out, pretty much everybody. Considering that he is saying this in the context of the celebration of Hanukkah, it seems very likely that he is pulling from a period of time that started with a lot of hope and just fell apart and decayed into power struggles and murder. We might say that those shepherds and their history, not so good. There were bright moments. I mean, there was a miracle that happened to maintain the holy space of God that is celebrated to this day. And there were martyrs. There were people who died for their dedication to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the great martyrs of the Maccabees. And wildly enough, some of the writers, and I think this is in 4th Maccabees, but check my work, it's in one of them. It's one of those things I should have looked up and refreshed myself on. But nonetheless, it was said that the death of those martyrs atoned for the sins of Israel. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? See, Jesus has this funny way of pulling from Israel's history and embodying it. So just like those martyrs, it was said, died for the sins of Israel in some shape, way, or form, Jesus is going to do the same with one very important difference. Those martyrs stayed dead. Jesus, and this caught a lot of attention, did not. And people realized very quickly that means something. That means that his death, Jesus' death, accomplished something that theirs did not. That in Jesus, sin is actually defeated. Death is actually defeated because what else could it do? Now, I say all this because the history of shepherd-type leaders, priest-kings, and these are all titles kind of thrown on leaders of Israel, are kind of a mixed bag. Some are very much to be honored, at least, and especially part of their lives, and plenty of others did what humans do best. And it's probably just a coincidence, but I feel like that's sometimes a helpful way to look at certain days like Mother's Day. Because on the one hand, as Jerry was saying during the children's message, like, you know, we celebrate our mothers. Mothers do a lot for us. Mothers love us unconditionally. Mothers might even say that they're willing to die for us. Let's not... Don't hear me say, call your mother and ask her if she's willing to die for you. That was just super weird. Or at the dinner table tonight, if that's how you celebrate Mother's Day, like just watch everything come to a complete halt. that'd be so weird. But the ideal picture of a mother is somebody who would give everything. And in a lot of ways does and has. And I'm very fortunate. My mother is very much in this category. And I know that that's not the case for everybody. Mother's Day sometimes can be a really hard day because mom was taken too soon. Or mom was taken at the appropriate time at a ripe old age and it still hurts that she's gone. Or mom didn't really live up to that. And memories of mom are hard. Mom was constantly criticizing. I could do nothing right. Mom was just mean or a mean drunk or abusive or whatever. In other words, whenever we talk about somebody like a mother, I think we do ourselves a disservice if we don't encapsulate the whole experience. Sentimentality gives us nothing. And much like a shepherd, I think as Jesus is drawing, pulling that imagery, he's into the forefront, he's pulling a very mixed bag, very complicated set of stories. But he also has this funny way that if he's going to pull out these stories and show them to us in our faces, He's also going to embody and live in those stories. I realize it's kind of a strange thing to say, but like, Jesus' presence in your life can redeem a bad mother. Because Jesus has a tendency to fulfill and to redeem even those really hard parts of our story. Which I think is why Jesus is so adamant to say, I am the good shepherd. And in fact, he's so good, and it's not in our reading, it's in the section right before that, verse 11, John 10, 11. He says, I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. What a striking thing to say about sheep. I don't know if you've ever encountered sheep, but they are dumb, wild, panicky animals, and they are mean. 20-plus years ago, I spent a chunk of my summer in Ireland, one of the happiest summers of my life. It was just amazing. And there, if you've ever been to Ireland, you'll know it's wet, incredibly green and gorgeous, and once you get out of the city, there's sheep everywhere. And my friend, who was on the team that I was with, I'll call him Brett, that's not his real name, to protect his decision. we were out by this incredible bluff overlooking the ocean, and just this beautiful green. It was somewhere right on the northern coast, but not in Northern Ireland, in the Republic. And there was this sheep, and Brett was like, oh, cool. And we were kind of standing there going, does he know? Nah, I don't think he knows. Let's see how this plays out. He learned sheep are mean that day. We see him running, and that sheep has got its dumb head down and ready to smash him. It's not just that Jesus would pull from all of Israel's history with shepherds and shepherd kings and that kind of thing, that he would identify himself as our shepherd and we his sheep. That's about half the story. The other half is that calling us sheep is a really apt metaphor. Sheep have a tendency to get themselves stuck in just bizarre ways. How many times have you found yourself in a situation in life where you are just stuck and it's totally your fault? Don't raise your hand, because it would, I know it's everybody. How many times have we been, because we're sheep, really, kind of whipped up into a frenzy of fear, and in response, bitten the first person we could find? That's a good chunk of us. How many times have we been led astray? Thinking, hey, this sounds good. This person, and they could be anybody, teacher, middle manager, community leader, mayor, governor, senator, president, emperor of the world. It really doesn't matter. Like, where we've just kind of followed their voice because it sounded good. It may not have sounded like Jesus, but it sounded good. And only to find that was a mistake. Calling us sheep is both accurate and not a compliment. But there's a difference, because Jesus is our good shepherd. A good shepherd is not going to leave us stuck. A good shepherd, after biting him for the seventh time, is not going to say, okay, where are the wolves? Because the sacrificial lamb, here, you have him. A good shepherd who cares about his sheep, who lays his life down for his sheep, is not going to say after we've wandered for the millionth time, enjoy it, you'll be fine. Actually, you won't, but I don't care anymore. The good shepherd leaves the 99 and goes hunting for that one. Which leads us to a final question. Jesus, after identifying himself as the good shepherd, in contrast to a history that is very mixed of shepherds that had some good qualities but ultimately failed miserably, to shepherds that were just terrible, to a few that were good, Jesus said, "My sheep know my voice." Which leads me to the question, how do I know Jesus' voice? And by that, of course, I'm not being super literal, like, well, he's kind of a high tenor, has sort of an Irish accent, because God is Irish and we all know this. sorry. Anyway. But I mean, how do we know when we're under the shepherd's fold of Jesus? What does that look like? What does it sound like? What does it feel like? I mean, there are several ways that this can that we can know. I mean, as Lutheran Christians, we put a lot of emphasis on that moment we received the Lord's Supper, because that's the voice of the shepherd. Quite literally, he said these words, "This is my body. This is my blood." And so we take him at his word for it, that he's present. And then he also says that when we do this, we proclaim his death, meaning we draw ourselves, or we ourselves are drawn into this huge story that this very simple meal represents, that it connects us all the way back to Passover, when God rescued Israel by the blood of a lamb. Only at this time, it's a new Exodus, and we are being rescued from ourselves. And we're drawn into that story, and when we receive Jesus, we receive that forgiveness that he won. That's the voice of the shepherd. I think we can also learn to hear Jesus' voice, or discern which shepherd we're following, by asking ourselves what it does to us. Because there are lots of would-be shepherds. Some of them want to just lead people to follow Jesus as their good shepherd. Others have a very different agenda. And so one way to discern that is, what is it doing to you? Do you find yourself looking a little bit more like Jesus? Not a lot, let's not be narcissistic, but just a little. Is it easier to love your enemies and to pray for those who persecute you? Because that's a very Jesus thing to do. Is it easier to care for and care about the people who have nothing to offer you? Because that sounds like Jesus. Is it easier to forego your interests, your desires, for the sake and benefit of somebody else, within reason? Because that sounds a lot more like Jesus. Also sounds a little bit like a really good mother. And how do we do this? By encountering Jesus every opportunity we can get. There's reason why we would say that joining together in worship with the body of Jesus is good for us. Because we hear his voice, we feel his presence, we get further drawn into the story that he's telling. Learning to read our Bibles more and deeper and better can help us hear what Jesus has to say to us. Spending time in fellowship with our brothers and sisters in Christ, these are These are all ways that we can learn to hear the voice of the shepherd a little bit better. So on Good Shepherd Sunday, which is what today is called, we renew ourselves to remember, to follow the Good Shepherd, to learn to hear his voice a little bit better, and to remember that the story that he's telling as the Good Shepherd is specifically in contrast to all the other shepherds that might try to draw us into something else. Amen. As you are able, please rise.